second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him coming up at high noon. But we always enjoy our sessions, our chats with our next guest, Ryan McGee, ESPN, SEC Network. He does it all. Ryan is on the line with us. How you doing?
I'm waiting. We all are. It's just, you know, TikTok. We're just, it's funny, I wish you guys could see. I wish I would not get in trouble with work if I could just, like, live broadcast my email inbox. Because we have this group email with all the college football writers at ESPN, and it is like a slot machine. I mean, it is nonstop. I mean, literally right before I came on with you guys, it was, NC State is postponing its season opener.
Yep.
And there was some Vandy news earlier. So it is nonstop. But that's just how it is for everyone right now. How you guys doing?
Well, we apologize on the front end for being a little bit late, because the first hour and at the end of that hour, a lot of this is confusing for people. How, you know, we've got kids playing high school football on Friday nights in some counties, and you know, Metro Nashville is not. It's just like on the college scene, right? You know, the Big Ten, Pac-12, they say they're not playing in the fall, yet they're still gathering, they're still practicing. It's like, why are you doing that? But yet, you can do that, but you can't play on. There's so much confusion, Ryan, as you know, and I'm sure you get that in the inbox with all these people. Just don't know what is the right thing to believe or not or feel, because we're all over the place with everything.
Yeah, and it's the perfect microcosm of this entire experience, period, in the United States, right? I mean, it's everything's been left to the local whoever, you know, whether it's the state government, the county government, the city government, individual school systems, individual universities, individual businesses. I mean, everybody's, you know, the Walt Disney Company. I wrote this morning. I was watching the. Marty and I go back in the studio for Marty McGee in 2 weekends, but we're having to go through an orientation to do that. And I know that what we're doing is not what other people are doing. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's different. And so yeah, it's all over the place, and it's so much all at once. And you could kind of feel it coming. I mean, you know, here we are. We just had the Indy 500. The NASCAR playoff cutoff race is this weekend. We have NHL playoff games happening at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I've got multiple friends inside that NBA bubble down at Disney World. I got friends inside the MLS bubble and the WNBA bubble, which isn't quite like the other bubbles. And it's just, it doesn't matter where you are. I mean, right here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I live, most of the private high schools in North Carolina will be playing football Friday night, and most of the public schools are still waiting. And so, yeah, there's nothing good about it, and it's just frustrating because we all just want to get on with it, but we can't. And even when we can, we're not entirely sure what we can and can't do.
What's the feedback you're getting on the NASCAR side of things? The All-Star Race was in our state, as you know. You're very familiar with our state.
Right.
You live here.
I've been there.
Yeah, you've kind of been here, and you kind of know how the lay of the land goes. And they let 20,000, I think 20,000, 25, in for the All-Star Race at Bristol. NASCAR races have been hosting fans. Have you gotten any feedback on how that's gone, what the tracks, if they've done any follow-up, has there been? Because you're not hearing anything. Are you hearing anything?
No. I mean, what you hear is what happens in the garage. I haven't heard anything, and I don't think anyone's done anything or certainly provided any numbers to try to contact trace any cases back to Bristol Motor Speedway, you know, in the middle of the summer, or Texas Motor Speedway, or some of these places that have had fans. But, you know, I know what the situation is in the garage, which is kind of a semi-bubble. You know, I wrote a huge detailed story about this in May, right before NASCAR, which all due respect to the UFC, NASCAR was the first, like, big touring, big group of people sport to come back. And it came back in the middle of May, and I was there for the second race back at Darlington. And it was very detailed about where people could go and what they could do. But that was before they started getting on airplanes, and that was before they started staying in hotels. And knock on wood, there have been cases, but it hasn't been as bad as I think they had braced themselves for. The trick is, and this is the lesson that the NASCAR people have told me from the beginning. I wrote a column about this, too, back in June, which is, you know, the trick is to not get lax. The trick is to make sure you maintain the same vigilance with your regulations and your restrictions in August that you did in May. And I think that's going to be the trick whenever football does return, whenever these other sports do return. And my friends in the WNBA bubble said the same thing. It's just making sure that you stick with the plan, because it's easy to get relaxed. Like, oh, okay, we're fine. And I think, again, I think that reflects everything in general. If you went to Target once and 2 weeks later you felt fine, then you go back again, but maybe this time you don't wear your mask the whole time, or maybe this time you don't wash your hands when you get back in the truck. You know, I'm just, so I think the trick is, whatever your plan was, you got to stick with your plan.
We had Eric Moses on Monday's show to start off the week. Really impressive guy to talk to. He is going to be the new track president at the Nashville Super Speedway,
yeah,
and for Dover Motorsports. Really impressive guy. Looking forward to getting to know him better. But we had a really good interview with him, and we're excited that, you know, looks like next June, I guess. I know nothing is official, but next June could be first cup race in Nashville since the 80s. What, one, do you know much about Eric Moses, and how much have you been kind of talking about and understanding about Nashville getting, you know, a cup race and the Nashville Super Speedway opening back up?
Well, I do know Eric a little bit, and his reputation is off the chart. And the Dover Motorsports people, that's a small, I say poor but proud organization, and poor is a relative term, but they've done a really great job, and are really the last of the independents. You know, it used to be everybody owned a track, and you hosted a track, and you know, you paid your fee, and you made your gate, and that was it. And every track was owned by a different person. And then it got to the point where every track was owned by two people. And Dover had managed to hold out. And that, quite frankly, that's why they needed to move one of those Dover races to Nashville, was because in order for them to survive and to keep all their dates, to keep both their cup dates, that's what they needed to do. And that's why I think it was a super smart move. I'm excited about it. You know, I think we've all seen the enthusiasm that I knew was coming, but it's been good to actually see it unfold with the awards, with the Champions Week being moved to Nashville. Obviously, it's a city that knows how to host some people, and as someone who I never covered a cup race at the fairgrounds, but I covered a lot of truck series races out there. I'm so romantic. I took my future wife out there one time, because that's, you know, that's how I am. And I love that place. But it, you know, has always bothered me when I flew into Nashville for the SEC tournament, and then immediately flew right out, like literally never left the airport. I flew over the Nashville Super Speedway both ways, and it's always just a bummer to me that it's just sitting there. You know, and I'm a Rockingham guy. I can tell you how sad it is to drive past an empty racetrack all the time. And so for them to get a second chance, I'll give you a lesson, again, as a Rockingham, North Carolina native. Everybody better buy some tickets, because, you know, what we learned in Rockingham was that we got a truck series race, first race back there in 10 years or whatever, and first race, good crowd, second race, not a good crowd, and there wasn't a third race.
Hmm. You bring up Rockingham real quick, Willie. Ryan, my buddy lived close to there a few years ago, and so we drove by the Speedway, went out. They had an event out at the drag strip right there, and so we went to some drag races, and then I was like, well, I want to go check it out. Walked over to the Speedway, found a gate that was open, and went in and walked around. It was sad seeing the grass growing in the track and everything.
Yeah, I was literally born 5 miles away from that racetrack, and I still own my grandmother's house 3 miles in the other direction, and I will literally avoid driving past it because it makes me so sad. My dad was on a pit crew when I was in the early 70s with Dave Marcus, and so my history with that place literally goes back to my dad was the gas can man for Dave Marcus just a few days before I was born, and so it was my history of that place goes back to the very beginning. But it's I can't make myself drive past it.
Ryan McGee is with us from ESPN. Ryan, go a little further with what you were talking about. We had this discussion the other day. We'd be curious for your thoughts. We spent a lot of time and energy as a city talking about a upgrade of the fairgrounds, which includes the new MLS soccer stadium, which is under construction, and getting the old Nashville Speedway up to standard to where you could hold a big-time event. Now here come the Dover people. The Nashville Super Speedway is back in play. Could you ever see a scenario where each venue could host a big NASCAR event?
I do, but again, what will dictate that is the amount of enthusiasm shown by the community. So if they come back to Nashville Super Speedway and it's like it was when I covered the very first races out there, you know, 20 years ago, whenever it was, then they got a chance, you know, because it would be two very different events. You know, I think something that we've learned with so the pandemic, obviously the list of things that are awful about the pandemic are longer than we can even get into. But there's been a couple of good things sports-wise because we're seeing sports leagues try some things that I don't think they would have ever had the guts to try before. You know, I mean, like these goofy rules that baseball is using, you know, with the base runners. Just try it. You know, if it doesn't work, whatever. But use the pandemic as an excuse to do that. And with NASCAR, they're doing things with the schedule this year that I've been screaming for 20 years, which is, you know, the All-Star race at Bristol on a Wednesday night in the middle of the summer. You know, own the summer. I've been saying that forever with NASCAR. Shorten the races. Shorten the race weekends. No one has missed practice and qualifying, except for Kyle Busch. No one has missed it, right? And so, to me, I would put this, you know, you can run different events in the same market, spread them out a little bit, and, you know, run a traditional 400-mile, you know, 1.5-mile D-shaped oval race out of Nashville Super Speedway, and then, you know, give me some crazy old-school, you know, short-track doubleheader or all-star race at the Nashville Fairgrounds. I mean, why not? You know, you don't have to, you're not going to do them back-to-back nights. But, again, a ticket is a vote. So if race fans in Nashville want that to happen, then when they have the opportunity, they need to buy tickets.
You mentioned a great theme that's going on, flexibility in the schedule. We're seeing NASCAR do it, as you just pointed out. Baseball has had to do it. I'm curious with the SEC, let's just use them, but you could easily say ACC, which, as you just hinted at, we hadn't mentioned that before, but they've already had to push a game back. What kind of flexibility does the SEC have for that kind of thing? If they have an outbreak, we saw that they've got some issues at Alabama on campus right now. We just know some of these challenges are going to happen as you push through this. What kind of flexibility is there in the SEC schedule? Because you can't just play 2 7-inning doubleheaders.
Everything has to be written in pencil. I'm as simple as that. And every conversation that I've had with Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, about that, and every conversation I've had with people to Big 12, people to ACC and Sun Belt, whatever, everyone agrees that the schedule that you have in your hand that everyone has given you, it is really pretty and color-coded and the whole thing. But that thing is written in pencil at best because, you know, if a team has a sudden outbreak, I mean, we just had Lincoln Riley saying yesterday that he's missing at least one player in every position group. And so if you have a team that just can't do it, then you institute the Florida Marlins rule. All right, you know what? You're not playing the next two games. You're quarantining everybody, and you're creating a bubble. And if that team misses two games, then, you know, what's the last team they just played? They're probably going to have to miss at least one game. And so everyone's going to have to be flexible. And what I have said all along is I keep going back to what we used to tell my daughter when she was in, you know, elementary school. You get what you get, and you don't pitch a fit. And everybody has 10 or 11 games on their schedule. If you play six and that's all you get, thank you very much. You know, I go back to April when everybody's like, oh, I don't want to watch sports without fans. Yeah, you do. Or I don't want to watch so-and-so. Yeah, you do. You'll take whatever you can get. And people rolled their eyes at the NBA's idea in the beginning. It's working out fine. So, my feeling is it's all written in pencil. And, you know, I really believe that if the season gets rolling, there will be games canceled. There will certainly be games postponed. And it's going to be like a Jenga puzzle. You're going to have to move this piece and put it somewhere else. And again, whatever we end up with when we get to December, and I just hope that we get to December, then we'll just take whatever we can get and we'll have whatever kind of playoff there is, and we'll let those other guys play the Rose Bowl in May.
Ryan McGee is with us, ESPN, the SEC Network. So along those lines, we, you know, talking about high school football here in town, of colleges, Big Ten, you know, that Darren brought up earlier of, all right, well, they're not trying. The SEC is at least trying. How many games do you think have to be completed for us to look at the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and go, you guys are silly? I mean, yeah, they didn't get the whole season in, but at least they got some. That's revenue. They got some games in. Do you think there is a certain number of games for us to feel that way, or is it just they're going to be silly no matter what for not trying?
I think if they get halfway through the schedule, you know, if you got 10 or 11 games scheduled and you get to get game six, I think that's when all these people who are already very angry, particularly in the Big Ten, the parents and everyone else, there was an open letter the parents wrote today to the Big Ten. At that point, they will boil over. But I also have warned people too, you know, because, you know, I'm fortunate enough to co-host a show on the SEC Network, and because I grew up on Tobacco Road, you guys know my dad was an ACC referee for 40 years. You know, I've got ties to these two conferences, but I keep telling everyone, don't get too cocky about this, because no one's played a game yet. And, you know, if we get to the end of September and suddenly, well, hey, you know what, we're going to try this again in the middle of October. And we get to the middle of October, hey, you know what, Halloween looks really good right now to start the season. Suddenly the Big Ten and the Pac-12 don't look so stupid. And so I just keep warning everybody, again, just worry about your deal and take care of your deal. And then, you know, history will let us look in the rearview mirror and thumb our noses, whichever way we want to thumb it.
So we've done this some on the show and obviously talking to people. But I find it, I want to talk about games. I want to, you know, look at schedules and say, okay, well, who's going to knock off Alabama? You know, how much of a fall off will LSU have? But it's difficult to do, because in the back of my mind, I'm going, well, I mean, are they even going to get to this game? Are LSU and Alabama even going to get that far to playing each other? Do you find yourself doing that when you're thinking about things, and, you know, whether it's, you know, talking about the show or your bosses, of, okay, I want to predict, I want to do my normal job, but it's kind of hard to do that?
100%. And I was telling you guys about that email, you know, chain with all the ESPN.com writers, and we wrestle with that on a daily basis, which is, you know, normally, I mean, the AP Top 25 preseason poll comes out, we came out on Monday, and every year we all have this big open document where we go in and react to it, and then they publish that as a story, and we all wrote the same thing, which is, this feels dumb, right? Well, we don't have any, Ohio State's number two, and we don't have any idea what that means. But yeah, you just have to pick your spots. I mean, listen, I should be working on my preseason bottom 10 right now, which I love to do, but I can't do it because I don't know, you know, do I just rank COVID 1 through 10 and send it in? I don't know. You know, it's just, you're exactly right. I wrestle with it on a daily basis. I mean, normally right now I would be on airplanes or at least in my truck, going to practice. And, you know, I had a whole thing set up with Panay Sewell, the monstrous offensive lineman and gentle giant out at Oregon. And I had this great story set up. And next thing I know, Pac-12 is not going to play, and Sewell was one of the lead players that spoke out about players' rights, you know, back when this whole thing first started on the West Coast. So it's, yeah, I mean, I wrestle with it on a daily basis. And I'll tell you this, too. I get so irritated with the people who think that, you know, the media, and I'm putting that in air quotes, that we're rooting for COVID to win and have no football and whatever. Listen, I'm not saying this to plug the book, but I kind of am. I got a book coming out in a few weeks that I wrote with my dad about my childhood on sidelines, on college football sidelines. To hell with y'all to think that I don't want them to play football. The only thing I have invested in college football is my livelihood and my emotional well-being. Other than that, nothing, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so it's just, I'm not enthusiastic about what's going to happen, but I've also never wanted to be more wrong in my entire life.
So I can't let you get out of here without me asking a racing question. They asked the NASCAR questions. Do you think this Daytona road course is going to stay on the schedule? Because I'm weird on road courses, especially the Rovals that we've seen in the last few years. But I'm not going to lie, Ryan, I kind of liked it.
No, it's great. In Charlotte, I mean, where I live, that Roval race has been a huge hit. So, I got no problem with it all. And, isn't it funny how things change, man?
I know.
I remember y'all's guy right there outside of Nashville, Sterling Marlin, used to just not even – he would mail it in. He just would carry just a big wad of stamps to Watkins Glen and Sears Point. He just did not want to be there. You know, he just – whatever points I can get, I'll get, but get me back to an oval. And now it's completely different. You know, now you look at the makeup of the garage, and all these guys grew up racing go-karts, and a lot of these guys came from, you know, road racing. And so they're the new short tracks. I mean, some of the best racing, and I love those. I love that Daytona layout. I've covered so many 24 hours of Daytona races down there, Rolex 24s, and so I love it, and I love what they've done at Charlotte. And you know, what I don't want them to do is I don't want them to all do the same thing. Now, we don't need 10 Roval races. You know, if we have two, that's fine. But I've got mixed feelings about this weekend. I love Daytona. I don't necessarily miss Daytona being on July 4th weekend, but I don't know how I feel about being a cutoff race for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem. Talladega for years was one of the cutoff races during one of, you know, the different stages of the three race stages of the playoff. That never bothered me that much. But but Daytona being the cutoff for who makes the playoff or not, I'm curious to see how that goes, and I don't think it's gonna go well.
Let's get you on for the release of your book here soon. How about that?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I wasn't trying to shoehorn it in there. I just but
it's okay though.
But this book's called Sidelines and Bloodlines. It's a father, his sons, and our life in college football. And I've co-written this book with my dad and my brother. And my dad, Jerry McGee, was a what we call FBS now. You used to call it, you know, Division I official. He did 404 games, a couple Rose Bowls, a couple national championships, a couple Orange Bowls, a couple Army-Navy games. I mean, his resume is unbelievable. And my first sideline pass was 13 years old, and I got completely run over at the goal line trying to take a picture with the camera that Santa Claus had brought me. And I was like, this is the greatest job in the history of the world. How do I get paid to go to games? And we've all figured it out, right? Don't tell anybody. But it's, you know, you guys know, I mean, sports are the best. And the best part of sports for me, was this connection that I forged with my dad and my brother. We lost my mom unexpectedly 20 years ago. And if it hadn't been for Dad's college football schedule that fall, I don't know how he would have coped with it all emotionally. And so, you know, if you've ever wondered what the referee's yelling what the coach is yelling at the referee and what the referee's yelling back at the coach, Dad tells so many of those stories. But then there's also the stories of my brother and I, you know, going to games as kids and just learning the game in a way that I don't think a lot of other people do.
I'm fascinated by those stories. I want to read it. So thanks for coming on, as always, and we will talk to you soon.
Anytime, boys. Thanks.
All right. That is Ryan McGee, ESPN and SEC Network. Always good to talk to him. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next.